From WRKF in Baton Rouge and WWNO in New Orleans, you're listening to Louisiana Considered. I'm Karen Henderson. On the show today, we'll learn about an archaeological site in North Louisiana that's older than the Egyptian pyramids and find out about a discovery by researchers at LSU that's being held as a breakthrough in the field of quantum physics. But first, the 2024 general election season is in full swing. Louisiana voters will participate in their presidential primaries later this month. U.S. House seats are also up for election, and those seats could see a major switch up due to recent redistricting in the state. The effort created Louisiana's second ever majority black congressional district, District 6. It stretches from Caddo Parish in northwest Louisiana to East Baton Rouge Parish. But the new congressional maps have faced pushback. A lawsuit is currently challenging the legality of District 6 borders. Jared Evans is senior policy counsel with the NAACP Legal Defense Fund and advocated for the new majority black district. He joins us now. Hello, Jared.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for having me.
Would you first remind us why Louisiana got a second majority black congressional district? Why did this happen in the first place, and why is that significant?
Oh, happily. I will happily remind you of why we got this district. We got a second black district because we sued the state. When the legislature first got the census numbers back and redrew the congressional districts in the extraordinary session, the first extraordinary session of 2022 in February of that year, they failed to add an additional black seat. And so we asked Governor Edwards to veto that map, and he vetoed it. But a few weeks later, the legislature overrode his veto. And so we sued on the map that was that then became law, which was the congressional map that continued to have just one majority black district, packing black voters in Baton Rouge and in New Orleans into one single district. And so we sued that. Our lawsuit was filed in March of 2022, and from then until earlier this year, it was a back and forth in all three levels of the judiciary, in the Middle District of Louisiana in Baton Rouge, in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals based out of New Orleans, and even the U.S. Supreme Court got involved. And simultaneously, we were fighting in the legislature as well. This past January was the fourth session called by the legislature or the governor to deal with redistricting. And so they finally, after many years of intense and high level of protracted litigation, they legislature passed a map that had two majority black districts. Obviously, District 2 continues to be anchored in New Orleans, but District 6, the new majority black district, as you mentioned, stretches from Shreveport and Caddo Parish, the northwest part of the state, down through Baton Rouge and East Baton Rouge Parish.
Now, you mentioned the census. What did the census numbers tell you?
Well, to start with, everything in redistricting begins and ends with the census. I think that's the most important thing for your audience to know, is that when the census numbers come back, what they show is whatever results they show, that's how the districts are drawn. And the census numbers from 2020 showed that not only did the black population in Louisiana increase, but the white population decreased by about 6%. Black people in Louisiana make up about one third of the state's population. And if you add in other minorities, you know, Asian Americans and Hispanic Americans, close to 40% of the state is minority overall. And so when we saw those numbers, we were confident that a map could be drawn that had two majority black congressional districts. And we submitted about seven different configurations to the legislature of a map that featured those two black districts, and they failed to pass any of them. And that's how we got this lawsuit, and that's how we got here where we are now.
Right.
With a second black district.
All right. So who's challenging a second black majority congressional district, and why? And does this mean we'll have another round of redistricting before November?
There's two claims when you are challenging a map based off of race. Our challenge when we filed in March of 22 was on Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which talks about providing minorities opportunities to elect their candidate of choice. And this new case that was filed shortly after Governor Landry signed this map, the plaintiffs in that case, who identify themselves as non-African-American, whatever that means, they are saying that this map was a racial gerrymander. And that is a legal term that just means race was the predominant factor that was taken into consideration when drawing the map. And the Supreme Court has said that race cannot be a predominant factor. Certainly race can and should be taken into consideration, obviously when you're drawing districts, but it cannot predominate. And so the argument of the people who have filed this new lawsuit, their argument is that race was the predominant factor in drawing the map. Now, we know that not to be true, because the author of this map, he said himself in both chambers and in both committees, politics was a predominant factor to protect certain incumbents who the majority felt were essential to protect for their own political interest. And the Supreme Court has not only said politics can be taken into consideration, but they welcomed political drawing of maps.
And Congressman Garrett Graves has been saying he believes that the current two district map will be ruled unconstitutional, which, again, as you said, remains to be seen. Do you worry?
Well, you kind of expect him to say that. You know, it's his district, it's his re-election chances. So you kind of expect him to make that argument.
Do you worry about the impact this might have on turnout or voter enthusiasm?
I don't. I'm not concerned about that because I think minority voters will be very energized by this opportunity that they have before them. It's been so many years since Black voters in the state have had an opportunity to ascend to people who look like them, who have their lived experiences, who know what it's like to be a minority in the South, who know that Chief Justice Roberts is wrong when he says conditions in the South have changed. It will be a game changer for many Black voters. And I think you'll see, the electorate will be energized. And I'm quite confident that in this fall's election, Black voters will be sending two members of Congress to Washington.
What impact do you think all this flux will have on the campaigns of people that are running to represent the district?
Well, that remains to be seen. I think all of the incumbents have all said that irrespective of what district they're drawn into, they are all planning to run for re-election. And at some point, whoever is in the second majority Black district, I fully expect that there will be a strong candidate running who is the preferred choice of Black voters.
What are the next steps for the court challenges? The very next step, what happens next?
We go to court next month. We will be in Shreveport for a hearing on April 6th and 7th in the Western District of Louisiana. And that is not the case. That is not our case. That's not the case that's before Judge Dick. This is the new case that's challenging the map that was the result of the litigation in Judge Dick's court. This is a three-judge panel who will be hearing this new litigation on whether the map that Governor Landry signed in January is a racial gerrymander. And so that hearing, again, is April 6th and 7th. And whenever we have a decision in that case, that will determine whether, this map, the current map, is okay for the Secretary of State to continue to implement, or if there are some issues. For example, if the court agrees with the plaintiffs in that case and says that this is a racial gerrymander, then we'll start what's called a remedial process of implementing a new map. So the most immediate next steps are April 6th and 7th in Shreveport.
Jared Evans, Senior Policy Counsel with the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. Jared, thank you for your time today.
No, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Take care.
From WRKF in Baton Rouge and WWNO in New Orleans, you're listening to Louisiana Considered. I'm Karen Henderson. Ouachita Parish in North Louisiana is home to an ancient archaeological site that's older than even the Egyptian pyramids and Stonehenge. The collection of 11 man-made mounds connected by an oval-shaped ridge is known as Watson Break. With more on these ancient structures, archaeologist and University of Louisiana Monroe professor Diana Greenlee joins us now. Diana, welcome to the show.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
Diana, let's start with where these mounds are located. Where exactly are they located and how were they discovered?
Well, they're located south of West Monroe, and they had been known about for quite a while by the local folks. And it wasn't until I think the 1980s that Risa Jones, who grew up in the area, brought it to the attention of Dr. Joe Saunders, who was then the archaeologist at the University of Louisiana Monroe. Risa knew about the big mound, Mound A, and I guess it wasn't until the area was logged that she recognized the other mounds in that oval.
All righty. And so you have this set of 11 mounds. They're different sizes. And originally, I guess you have, it was a wooded area, so you might not even notice that there's any kind of connection.
And even today, you know, it is woodsy, and you can't necessarily see one mound from another.
Diana, what have you been able to learn about the people who built these mounds?
Well, you know, from the work of Dr. Saunders and Risa Jones, we've learned a lot about the kinds of things that they ate, the kinds of tools that they made, you know, how those mounds were constructed, where there were different activity areas there. They have been able to really fill in a lot of the questions that we would have about those people.
Well, fill in some of those questions for us. How were the mounds made?
Well, it's really kind of interesting that so if you look at the mounds that are on the terrace edge, so the site is built on a little promontory, a terrace, and the ones that are on the edge, people used sand and gravel from the adjacent stream, I guess, to build up the mounds directly over occupational debris or midden where they had been living. But if you look at the, and they did that, those constructions are in a series of layers. So they didn't build them just all at once. But if you look at the mounds that are away from the edge of the terrace, they were built from the dirt that would be right outside of that oval, of that the mound complex. And they seem to be built all at once. So they're using two different construction techniques to build the mounds. There's evidence that they were living in the area before the mounds were built, while the mounds were being built, and presumably after the mounds were being built.
We are speaking with archaeologist Diana Greenlee about an ancient archaeological site in North Louisiana. What was the purpose of the mounds? Are you able to figure out why the mounds were created by what you're finding as you dig and see what's inside of them? Is it just the material from the areas near them, or did they use it to cover something? Is there something in the mounds?
There are things in the mound that are, you know, you'll have artifacts that appear to have been just incorporated into the fill. And you've got evidence of occupation or activities, but I don't think that those really tell us why they built the mounds. You know, later on in time, we know that some mounds were used as cemeteries to bury people. We know that some mounds were used as platforms for buildings, but neither of those functions seem to apply to the mounds at Watson Break.
And so what are you finding in the mounds at Watson Break?
So we find a suite of artifacts. So spear and dart points, chipping debris from making those points and other kinds of tools, animal remains and plant remains from the things that they were eating. Yeah, and then what we call midden, which is just the debris from everyday living, has, you know, charcoal and enriched organic sediments and things like that.
I know you've worked on other archaeological sites in Louisiana, and you're presently at Poverty Point. How does this one compare to Poverty Point?
Well, Joe Saunders and I used to sort of tease each other a little bit because he would tell me that, you know, Watson Break is a lot older than Poverty Point. And then I would say, well, Poverty Point is a lot bigger than Watson Break. So you can fit like two Watson Breaks just in the plaza. The age range is somewhere around 1700 to 1100 BC. And, you know, the park is 402 acres. The site doesn't, may not take up all of that, but the monumental core takes up most of that property. Yeah.
So bigger than Watson Break, but not as old.
That's right. Also very cool in different ways.
Well, how many sites do we have like this, these ancient sites here in Louisiana?
Well, I know that there are over 800 sites with earthworks in Louisiana. You know, we're losing archaeological sites daily through, you know, industrial development and farming, land leveling and things like that. The 800 sites that I mentioned are ones that are recorded with the state, but we know that there are other mound sites out there that are not recorded, and probably a lot more that have already been destroyed.
Now, I know you've made this your life's work. What is it about these types of discoveries? What draws you to this work?
I think it is just figuring out how to integrate science with history, which are both things that I really enjoy and am challenged by. So it's that challenge, and then being able to try to present that information that we learn to the public is just something that I find really fulfilling.
Archaeologist and University of Louisiana Monroe Professor Diana Greenlee. Diana, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
From WRKF in Baton Rouge and WWNO in New Orleans, you're listening to Louisiana Considered. I'm Karen Henderson. A discovery by a group of researchers from LSU is being hailed as a breakthrough in the field of quantum physics. The LSU Quantum Photonics Group has published research in the journal Nature Physics that challenges the conventional understanding of surface plasmons. The research represents a significant leap in the field of quantum plasmonics. The research group is led by LSU Associate Professor of Physics Omar Magana-Loeza. He joins us now with more on what they discovered and its significance. Professor, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for inviting me, and thanks for giving me the opportunity to share some science.
Well, let's talk about this discovery that was made by the LSU Quantum Photonics Group. First off, who makes up this group, and what is it that they do just on a day-to-day basis?
Yes. So we explore new properties of light, and then we study the potential of these properties to build new technologies. This is what we try to do every day, to find a new behavior of light and see how we can use that to create better technologies for sensing, for communication, for information processing in general.
What this group discovered is being called a significant leap in the field of quantum plasmonics. Tell us about what they discovered.
What we discover is that if you have a macroscopic classical system, you can break it into its quantum parts and still get benefit of these quantum properties. What we show is that you can use big classical macroscopic objects, such as a plasmon, then break it into its quantum parts, and then get the benefit of quantum.
I read an article where you compared it to a bicycle, riding a bicycle.
Yes, so I like that example because, as I just mentioned it, a bicycle is a classical macroscopic object. Imagine that you're just riding a bicycle. Then, if I tell you that most of the atoms in your body and also the atoms in the bicycle are moving in the same direction as the bicycle, you will say, sure. And that happens. I mean, most of the atoms will be moving in the same direction. But then some of them are moving in the opposite direction. Even if I tell you that, you might say, sure, I believe it, but show it.
We're speaking with LSU Associate Physics Professor Omar Magana-Loeza about a breakthrough in the field of quantum physics. Professor, what does this discovery mean in application? What is the potential for this discovery, for understanding, further understanding, and for advancements that can even better our lives?
So this has technological applications. One of them, for example, we're talking about plasmons. Plasmons are used for sensing, for biosensing, for medical applications. For example, plasmons were used back in 2007 to sense anthrax, and they were very useful. And these platforms are already robust because even though they are relatively new, there has been a lot of work. And then you have plasmonic sensors, very robust plasmonic sensors. With our findings, we can even increase that the sensitivity of that sensors to a new level because we can extract the quantumness out of those sensors and use that information to sense even smaller physical parameters or more sensitive samples or these kind of things.
LSU Associate Physics Professor Omar Magana-Loeza. Professor, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for inviting me.
From WRKF in Baton Rouge and WWNO New Orleans, you've been listening to Louisiana Considered. I'm Karen Henderson. Thanks to our guests, Jared Evans, Senior Policy Counsel with the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, archaeologist and University of Louisiana Monroe Professor Diana Greenlee, and LSU Associate Professor of Physics Omar Magana-Loeza. Our managing producer is Alana Schreiber. Our contributing producers are Matt Bloom and Adam Voss. We receive production and technical support from Garrett Pittman, and our assistant producer is Aubrey Procell. You can listen to Louisiana Considered Monday through Friday at noon and 7 p.m. on this station. It's available on Spotify, Google Play, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Major support for Louisiana Considered provided by Rouse's Markets, a Louisiana shopping experience, with additional support from the Historic New Orleans Collection.